Welcome to the Sounds of Success, brought to you by the National Association of Professional Martial Artists. This audio magazine is a tool for generating profitable ideas and for taking your business to new levels of excellence and performance. Here you'll find real-life case studies of school owners just like you who have applied our proven successful business and marketing principles to their school and are creating the business of their dreams as a result.
On the line with us today is Master James Theros, fifth-degree black belt in Hapkido, right, James?
Actually, multiple, but Hapkido is one of them.
Yeah. I want to get into that a little, and has been a long-time member of the coaching program that Master Oliver runs, and a NAPMA member forever, and you know, just has a fantastically tight-running school right now. And we want to go through, you know, James, some of the details of the curve pedagogy, or pedigree. Obviously,
someone has entered the conference.
Yeah, we need to figure out how to solve that. Hi, Robert. You studied many styles, and from what I understand, since you were about seven. And
studying for a little over 30 years now, and my primary core art was Taekwondo. And shortly thereafter, I got involved in Northern Shaolin Kung Fu, and Hapkido training followed pretty much in between the two of those someplace. And so our students, when they become black belts, are masters of the martial arts, not just one particular style.
Exactly. And you've woven that into your upgrade system very specifically, and I think we should talk about that in a little bit. That makes sense. Let's start off, obviously, children's programs, adults programs, and also some sort of private training type of programs. Can you give everybody a little overview of how your age cycles work out and what your class structure looks like?
Sure. We use the Little Ninjas program, so we don't have any separate adult classes any longer. We tried running that for a while, and it didn't gel for us. We integrate the kids and parents together.
Right. So which you know, honestly, follows along the Mahayana karate model pretty well too. We learned that a long time ago that you can have separate martial arts classes for adults, and also helps give them the extra little push that they need, because of course they need to be sparring separately and stuff like that, and you know, all those type of things. But for building really, really strong retention in a school, it really helps to have the parents involved in the classes with the kids as well. Has that been your experience so far? How did that sort of roll?
Different times where we tried to make an adults-only class, and I think I've done that over the past 15 years very unsuccessfully each time. So what I started doing was just to make sure that we had enough seats for parents to be in the room, and we taught classes and made it interesting enough for them to want to get involved. Not happening at a separate time, which allows us to make our schedule.
Someone has entered the conference.
Yeah,
and that's pretty much how we've done it. So we still have the separate adult classes for different areas on the floor, and so there is an adult class going on, but it's not at a separate time.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, I think the counter argument that school owners like to make on that, and which has some merit, is that, you know, a 7-year-old has different education. Now, having said that, it doesn't mean that you can't figure out how to manage the class in a way that stimulates both. And that's what you've, you know, come to the conclusion of as well, is that it doesn't take anything away from the 7 or 8 year old's class to have a 27-year-old in there training with them. Now, it does take something away from the 27-year-old's training if they're only there to go work on, you know, highly athletic skills that maybe the kids wouldn't be able to keep up with at that stage or something like that. Then they get equally stimulated. What do you feel that that's done with your retention for the adults? Has that helped or hurt the adults' retention rate in the school?
If I have someone who's maybe between the ages of 18 and 30 that calls my school, they're probably not the best fit for my school unless they've got kids. So I'm targeting children, more specifically parents of children. So if I have children here, that means there's parents with them, and that's the adults that I'll go after. There's a school right down the street from me that focuses strictly with adults, and I'll send the adults over there.
I know the answer to this question, but why is that? Why is your target adults with kids?
Well, you've got to be focused. If you're just trying to be everything to everyone, then you're not going to be anything to anyone. So you've got to get focused on who it is you're trying to capture into your school. And, you know, that's the thing for everybody. I had everybody here from 3 years old to 103 and had different programs for different age groups and different types of people, and it just became too much because I was teaching it all myself. And, you know, I've grown out of that stage quite a bit.
Sure. Yeah, and you can't be all things to all people, especially in a marketing environment. If a lot of people call NAPMA and they...
Someone has entered the conference.
Yeah, we need to fix that. So a lot of school owners will call NAPMA and they'll ask, you know, marketing questions, and we'll take a look at one of their marketing pieces, screaming at the wind. If you're standing out in the middle of a hurricane and you're yelling at the top of your lungs and hope that everybody can hear you, you just get lost in the noise. But if you're taking a bullseye approach, if you're taking like an archer's approach, a sniper, and you're picking exactly who your bullseye target is, and you speak it, so it's very challenging in, think about a 30-second television commercial. It's very challenging to show a 3-year-old kicking and punching and having fun, and then a 27-year-old rolling on the ground, choking somebody out, right? It's sort of an incongruent message. And not that those are each other, you can operate those type of programs however you choose in your school, you know, and be very successful with it. But when you're talking about marketing and we're talking about attracting a market, you have to pick the market that you want and aggress. So in your estimation, your bullseye is, you know, mom and dad who have a kid, you know, 4 to 12, and or have obviously some expendable income, right, because they have to be able to, you know, make it to the school and afford the lessons and stuff like that. Stable market is the 18 to 24-year-old, you know, college graduate, high school graduate that's just getting their first job in the marketplace, right? They tend to be a less stable market for, obviously, they're less stable financially, but they're, like, flakier too, right? I mean, you know.
Yeah.
Not that you can't make a very successful school out of teaching, you know, high-performing mixed martial arts to 19-year-olds. But, you know, that just isn't the path that you've chosen. So, yeah, that makes perfect sense. Okay, good. So that's your age structure and your there's 4 or 5 topics I wanted to be able to get to. But let's rewind the tape 4 or 5 years. And where was your school, you know, before you had this, you know, this big increase, student body and things like that?
Well, it was. I hate to use the cliche, but it was definitely night and day.
Mm-hmm.
I can't even imagine what it was like back then. I don't know how I survived back then. You know, I was probably grossing somewhere between $12,000 and $15,000 a month to meet the financial needs. I went through a divorce because of it. It was just terrible. And you know, I basically was running a charity. And you know, it's really tough to think back to. Just 4 or 5 years ago, how terrible it was.
Sure. So about how many students did you have in the school at that time?
I probably had 80 or 90. 2,200 square feet.
Okay. And are you in the same facility now?
I'm in the same shopping plaza, but in a new facility.
Okay. Okay, so 3 or 4 years ago, we were at about 12 to 15.
Someone has entered the con.
Plus or minus.
Yeah.
In the 2,200 square foot, so that's probably yikes. I mean, that just looking at the number off the top of my head, that looks like rent is probably 50% of your gross. But you know,
yeah.
At that point, this year you had a very strong finish of the year, which is another topic we should probably touch on. But what did the school look like, you know, this year?
Well, we're in a 5,000 square foot facility now. It's state of the art, inside and out, and as far as active enrollment count, at our location as well. The gross is up. I think we closed the month out at somewhere around 40. You know, we've hit spikes of 60 before, but as an average.
Yeah. So basically, you went from you doubled your square footage, which is interesting, but you only added 100 students. So you were at about 100 students at about 12 to 15,000 a month. Now you're at about 200 students at about 40,000 a month. So just under 500,000, which is, you know, a really good number, on 200 students. So
yeah.
if you're a school owner on the call and you think you need to have 750 students to be able, these numbers are almost identical to what the school in Orlando did last year. It's 200 students, you know, about 500,000, something like that. So very typical, very doable numbers. It's not an unknown quotient at all. It's very formulaic. A little bit from 80 or 90 students and 12,000 a month to, you know, 200 students and, you know, 40 or 50,000 a month. What were the big changes? What were the big ahas? What were the big, catalysts to make that happen? What was number one?
if I had to put it to number one, and I'm going to be honest here because I know people on the call aren't going to believe me when I say this, but the big turnaround with members come and go, you know, like the wind, just like a regular student in somebody's school. But I've stayed with him because he's the kind of person that can raise your belief. And that's the one thing. If you can raise your belief into what's possible and get around people who have a bigger, because underneath that, if you can get that, everything else will take care of itself. You'll be able to figure out all the hows. You just got to discover why it is you want to do something. And when you discover the why you're doing it, and you realize that you can do it, and you look at the guy next to you who is successful, and it's all about the thought process. And that's the biggest thing.
Absolutely. I think that's brilliant. Were you, just off the top of my head, were you at that Summit of Martial Arts Millionaires, you know, 4 or 5 years ago?
I don't think I was at boot camp in a box. I believe that's the one where all the big hitters came out.
You know, that was my aha. That was what you just said. That created that for me. What happened to me in my head was, you know, Steve LaValle, and it was Tim Kovar and Keith Hafner and, you know, Lloyd. It was these guys that in my vision were the giants in the industry, and they certainly are. And Bill Clark and you know, I mean, just a cornucopia of works and how a martial arts school works and stuff like that. And you can agree or disagree with any of the, like you said, of the hows, right? You can agree or disagree with any type of widget, you know, of how their contract is structured. You can agree or disagree with any of that. But the one thing that I noticed while I was sitting in the room just as a fly on the wall, I didn't say a word, right? I was just watching, was everybody thought about limitless opportunity. I didn't hear anybody in the room say the words for me because, you know, people are, you know, buying XYZ Christmas presents and they're not spending money on martial arts. I didn't hear any of that. All I heard was, you know, how do we push through the next obstacle and achieve the next goal? How do we accelerate our own learning? How do we accelerate our own perception of what's possible, you know? And that was the aha moment for me. But what you said, I think, is brilliant. There are no limitations, right? There's no reason you can't do X. And the only reason that you can't do it is because of the way you think about it, not anything else. And I think that was very eloquently said, surrounding yourself by people who don't think that. Well, if that's number one, that's brilliant. I think that's fantastic. What do you think is number two, nut and bolt-wise? What did you have to do mechanically?
I had to learn how to market. And that when I started learning and understanding, I had always understood marketing to a certain degree. But you know, when I met Master Oliver, it really opened my eyes into a whole new world. And when you learn to market properly, it just basically supercharges you as an instructor and as a human being. I think, you know, that marketing is just, it's properly, then you're going to be successful. I mean, that's definitely number two.
Sure. Driving traffic. I mean, that's, if you forget to do that, you know, what happens if next month you only do one enrollment and, you know, no renewals? You know, I mean, it makes it really tough to operate a school. So what was the big breakthrough on marketing? Was it any particular media that you hadn't been stimulating, or was it just your approach to all the media that you were using?
I just think that I wasn't doing enough that they'll show up. You know, I'm a good martial artist, and, you know, I've got a reputation, and, you know, people know me through the competition and environment, and people are just going to show up, and that wasn't the case. And so you have to go, you got to go let people know who you are.
Sure. Too overly broad and try to attract everybody because then nobody's attracted. That's brilliant. Okay, so number one was, you know, getting your thinking in line so that you eliminated the barriers that you kind of put on yourself. Number two was acquiring the skill set of being a marketer. Like you said, it's a matter of doing more stuff. And kind of thinking about it the right way. What do you think were the two or three or four or five, you know, nuts and bolts that you did in your marketing activity that you think started to create some results for you?
The biggest word I could throw out there that would kind of encompass everything, just learning how to direct market and make sure that you hit the mark, you know, message to market match, which means you basically are looking, you know, to get the right person and put the message in front of that person. And, you know, a lot of people put up, and it, you know, as it's like the generic phone book ads, and I apologize if there's anybody in the call that has that kind of an ad, but it just basically tells the name of the school and what they teach there and a phone number, which that's not advertising. That's branding, basically, but, yeah. You know, nobody cares about that, but they want to get out of the martial arts. So So you've got to educate them on who you are as a school and what your unique selling proposition is, what makes you different from the guy down the street. And
someone
what,
has
you know,
entered the conference.
Why are you doing, you know, why are you even in the martial arts to begin with? What's your mission? And so if you learn how to get that out there, commercial on TV or something, or any kind of, you know, a car commercial, it's repetitive and repetitive, and eventually it sinks into your subconscious.
Yeah. And direct response is definitely the structure of the marketing that you know we teach, but also that we know works, you know, from proven methods. And what you said is exactly right. You have to pick the message to the market and make sure that it matches. And if your bullseye is the mom of a 7-year-old is 21-year-old athletic ultimate fighter, then you need to learn how to speak that language, and you need to market in that language. And, Chris Pizzo, who's a real good friend of ours, he's sort of the anti-martial artist. I'm not sure if you've met Chris yet. Very, 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 very successful, I guess you could call it street self-defense course. It's actually World War II combatives, and he presents it as an add-on to your martial arts program or an add-on to your adult program, right? And anyway, the 25-year-old ex-Marine who learned this stuff, you know, in the dirt and the mud, right? And he speaks Marine language. So he speaks to the people who are, you know, the bouncers and who are the security personnel and their verbal patterns are, you know, that type of thing. And he's a very, very good marketer because of that, because he understands his market so well. And something you said earlier that you focus martial arts school owners on is loving your art is fantastic and you have to. That's a mandatory. That's a given. That's you know, level one. Level two, level three is understanding your customer, understanding your prospect. Fall in love with your customer. Meet the needs of the customer. Then you have to figure out how to make it meet the needs of the customer, right? So I think that's what you said, and learning how to be a direct response marketer is the big skill set. So I think that's perfect. So that's number two. What do you think, James, believe that these things are possible and you've surrounded yourself by people who are doing it so you don't have any more excuses, right? And I mean, for me, that was a big thing, right? I had to look around me and say, you know what, I'm like as smart as these guys are. How come I can't do this, right? So I think that was a big deal. And number three was, what was the next key for you getting from, you know, 120,000 to 500,000 a year?
Two words, brass ball. You just have to be able to, you have to understand that when you start to become successful, people are going to start sniping at you. They're going to criticize you, and they're going to make, you know, try to pull you down a notch. And you've got to be immune to criticism, which is something that Master Oliver told me from the beginning. And, you know, and finally I fall where they may. And it's just an attitude. So it goes back to kind of full circle.
Yeah, let's frame that. I think that's exactly right. But I think we can frame that around implementation, right? It's having, you know, I actually, this is a funny story, it just happens to tie in. I got an email from a person in Albuquerque, New Mexico, and he's a martial arts school operator, and not an ATMA member, by the way, not even a member, but responded to one of my informational emails. I have an e-newsletter list, and he opted into the about how to keyword optimize your website. Anyway, just make a long, a worded letter. Saying that my website was manipulative because it was trying to get the person to give me their email address. And really what the website was is a sales letter, and the ultimate outcome of the sales letter is a free DVD, a free CD, and actually we sent him a bonus DVD as well, and a report on building self-confidence and focus in children from 4 to 12. And of course it's a lead generation activity for the martial arts school. But this guy thought that I was being unethical, because I was offering a free report if I didn't have at least their email address and probably their mailing address. But anyway, I forwarded the email to a few of my friends, and Mr. Oliver was one of them that got the email, and his response to me, James, was what you just said. It was any mediocre mind can complain, and most do. You know, any you know, negative energy from coming your way at all, right? If someone has a complaint, they can take it up with the complaint department because I'm not particularly interested. I'm going to do this because I believe it's going to work, and of course you see results. So, you know, results speak for themselves. But talk a little bit about that. Talk a little bit about implementation bolts-wise to make a big, you know, significant change like that. Pricing structure, sales cycles, you know, that type of thing. What do you think the number one implementation was?
Charge more.
Pricing?
Charge more, yeah. I mean, if you charge more for what you do and you're out the extra money, people aren't as price conscious as so many people think that they are. I mean, look at if you go to Las Vegas, does it look like there's any scarcity of money going around, and how many people are going to Las Vegas and gambling, and they're putting their actual, a full, what it would cost you and I to buy lots and things out. There's no shortage of money. And I live in Indianapolis, Indiana, which is, you know, rural town, Denver. It's about one half of the size, maybe one third of the size of Denver. And, you know, even here, there are people out here that live extravagantly, and so it's not about the money; it's about the quality. And if you've got the quality, why aren't you? But I had in my garage, and it was just a year old, and it was in mint condition. I don't care how much I like you; it's still worth whatever it's worth. You see what I'm saying? So I charged only $5,000 for it, then you're not going to look at it as valuable, and I'm going to have basically shot myself in the foot for something I probably paid $40,000-$50,000 are going to look like in a year after you've driven it. I can tell you because I've done that for people. I've given them a car, and it's been in decent shape, and then a half a year later, it's completely demolished and, you know, not taken care of because they didn't have to pay or invest for it.
Sure. Yeah.
Well, then that's quality martial arts instructor, then why shouldn't you be charging the same that somebody at, like, a Sylvan Learning Center is going to be charging, or some psychiatrist. I mean, isn't that what we do as martial artists? We're counseling people. We're doing much more than just teaching them how to kick and punch, obviously.
Yeah, absolutely. That price elasticity, and then also what you said was two things. It was, number one, determines perception of value. So number one was price elasticity. So tell us a little bit about that. What was your pricing structure 4 years ago?
4 years ago, $99 a month, maybe something like that. And every time that I would come back from a 9 to 109 to 129 to 139 to 159, and now it's 179.
Okay, so. Okay. And of course, you've got an upgrade program from there.
Yes.
Okay, good. And I think you're at least a 50% price bump on that. So
absolutely.
Which basically means that the market can bear a lot more than most people think it can. Now, it's not about squeezing every penny out of a prospect that you possibly can, but what it is about is the second thing, price determining perception of value. And if you've got, here in Orlando, I have a YMCA in the exact same shopping center as the karate school, as one of the karate schools. And the YMCA has karate lessons, and they have two nights a week. And we charge, you know, $199 for a new program and $249 and $349 for upgrades. So obviously there's a huge price gap, right? And it hasn't affected our enrollments a bit, and it hasn't affected our retention. It's actually helped our retention. But which doctor are you going to pick? Are you going to pick the guy that's, like, the cheapest, the guy that's in the middle, or the guy that's, like, the most expensive, right? I mean, you know, always the guy that's the highest price, the most exclusive, the guy you can't really get to, he's only in town one day a year. He's the guy that everybody wants to. And it doesn't have a lot to do with being the used car salesman. It doesn't have anything to do with that. It has everything to do with over-delivering on every promise you make every time, 100%, without any gaps. So it doesn't mean that.
I say you shouldn't have to talk anybody into it. You know, if I sit down in the BMW and put my hands around the steering wheel, that sold itself. The salesman didn't have to say anything.
Yeah, yeah. Sometimes they might have to help you figure out how to finance it, right? Using all that stuff. But you're right. The sale happens when the service is delivered.
Absolutely.
So. Yeah, absolutely right. Expand on that a little bit. What are you doing in your school, sort of on a day-to-day basis, to make sure? What are some of the things that you're doing to ensure that $2 of service for every dollar of tuition you charge?
Well, you've heard the term Disney Dojo. That's definitely, you know, part of it. You've got to keep your school looking and smelling clean, and you've got to, you know, keep the maintenance up on it. You know, paint it, and then that's the end of their maintenance until next year. Light bulbs are out all over the place. It smells like sweaty feet, and, you know, there's stains in the carpet, and there's clutter everywhere. You've got to keep your school looking good and smelling good as well. You know, you've got to have your classes have to start and finish on time and just throw them up in front of the class. You've got to give them some training. You know, those are some of the big things. But, you know, I could probably expound on that for an next hour or two.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
Just professional environment. That's the to kind of sum it all up, professional environment, everything.
Thing, which is really cool. You have like a big mural of the bamboo forest on one wall, which is a really cool little tech. Looks very professional. It sort of resembles, you know, I don't want to say a Starbucks, but if you were to walk into a Starbucks and then you were to walk into the Dungeon Dojo down the street, you see that there's a major difference in the way it looks, right? But if you walk into a Starbucks and then you walk into your school, it's not stuff laying all over the place, right? It's very, you know, 5 40-inch plasma screens all around the, you know, periphery or anything like that. But it's very professional, and it looks really good. It's a perfect example. What do you think that, this is kind of an important part, but what do you think that your that perception of value, obviously you're not just teaching kicks and punches, that's worth, you know, 40, 50 bucks a month, right? What is it that you're doing on a day-by-day basis that encourages that helps a parent understand why it's worth, you know, $200 a month.
In here is being mentored either by me personally or by one of my instructors, and they're being mentored to believe, again, I'm basically teaching the same things that were taught to me in a business sense to my students in so that they can increase their growth. And if I can get my students to accomplish those things in their everyday lives, then the parents are willing to pay that money each and every month and more. And that's pretty much, in a nutshell, what it's all about, is you've got to educate. How is the martial arts helping you away from the dojo floor? How is it going to punch in a self-defense situation? Now, we all teach the principles of self-defense can be, if you can pick that apart and understand how that works, and then lay that over your how to go to school and become a good student, or how to make friends, or how to deal with the neighborhood bully, or anything like that, then, I mean, there's where the value is at. It's not about just how to defend themselves for their, you know, life and death situation. On the other hand, how many times have they had to defend themselves against stinking thinking, right? And thinking about themselves as not being good enough to charge enough or to be successful. And you're going to find that that's a life versus, you know, the back alley brawl that you hear about occasionally.
Sure, absolutely.
It's for me.
No, yeah, absolutely. On a daily basis, you're clearly and articulately communicating the benefits of training to the students and to their families.
Yeah, I want my students to become leaders and successful.
Say that again?
I want my students to become better leaders and more successful, and that's my mission, to defend themselves very well. I'm very confident in my own, probably more so than the average person ever thought about doing, but it's more than that. You know, you certainly have to have the passion for the martial arts physically, but you've got to take it, you've got to transcend the physical and get more into the mental side of things.
Yeah, absolutely. That's pretty concise. Anything else you can think of other than I've got a few more items here. But what do you think if you had to find one of the other keys from getting to 150 to 500,000 a year? You know, just as kind of a half, getting the right mindset and surrounding yourself by people who are going to be productive to that mindset, not counterproductive to that mindset. And then number two was just implementing, just getting it done. You know, getting out there and implementing those systems, you know, class structure and order, that type of thing. What do you think would be, if there's another breakthrough that you made in the last few years to get you where you are from where you were, what do you think that would have been?
Spending money. My wife hates it, but that's how we make it happen. And you've got a month on a...
Like entered the conference.
But, so you yank the ass. Are you willing to continue spending that money month after month after month to finally get to the place where you'll see the return on the investment? You know, you can't be stingy if you're going to be wealthy. You know, you've got to like to realize that eventually it's going to happen. So, I mean, again, everything that I've talked about comes back to the way, you know, you think about things. You know, in fact, I'm just putting wraps on a book that addresses this very subject. It's what's on my mind right now. You know, it's the biggest thing in my entire life that's not just my school, and that is,
yeah,
it's your thinking. It's between your ears.
Yeah. Zig Ziglar has a really interesting quote about business, and it says, business is never good or bad out there. It's only good or bad in there, between your own 2 ears. Obviously very charismatic on that type of thing, but it's exactly the right way to think about things. Okay, brilliant, brilliant. And you know, you said something in there, too, that's very valuable and an underlying theme in everything that you're talking about when you talk about marketing, is understanding what spending $200 or $300 or $500 on a ValPak ad that only nets two calls and one enrollment, because you know that one enrollment is going to be worth X. Owners who say, you know, how dare you think of a student in terms of dollars and cents? Well, the thing that they don't understand when they say that is that's not the only way that I perceive them. But I do have to have a very clear what their value is to the school in dollars and cents standpoint, so that I know how much I can afford to spend to go get more, and how much we can spend to serve the get. I would argue this, and I know all but one of the martial arts school owners in the areas where we have schools in Orlando, and I'm good friends with a few of them, you know, and many of them I know very cordially. Then most of them spend on their whole school anyway, maybe, you know, $7,000 or $8,000 a month in gross revenue, and it's got about 70 or 80 students. But I spend more money giving my students books and tapes and CDs and teleconferences and books and tapes and CDs. You know what I mean? I spend more money every month. Of course, the level of service, the level of the perception of the service is going to be more. Therefore, the financial return is going to be better. Therefore, that customer is worth more. So, I mean, it's very closed-minded to think that, you know, because it's a student, we shouldn't be thinking about the dollars in salvation. That just happens to be the barometer that we have to use to measure how the school is doing, but also how we can serve that student.
You mentioned Zig Ziglar, and one of his famous quotes is, you can have anything in life that you want if you first help enough other people get what they want first. And that pretty much sums it up, and that's exactly what I give first. And if I'm able to impact somebody's life and get them to a place where, you know, they're achieving their black belt, and it's been a, you know, kind of a challenge for them, so there's been a process that's taken place, and you talk to them and have them give a little bit of a history of how they got to that place, and they get emotional, and you ask them if they do, I mean, it's like that the commercial where everything has the numbers, and then you say something like that, and it's priceless. You know, I mean, it's the same thing for martial arts. We can make a commercial, you know, out of that particular model right there, but it's what it comes down to. You're serving the students first, and you're being paid based upon what.
Very concise way of putting it. That's exactly right. Well, good. Okay, good. Well, you know, just a couple more topics, and I think we've got about 15 minutes left. But you had a fantastic finish of the year of 2007. And a lot of people think that, you know, November, December have to be down times of the year because everybody's on vacation and everybody's, you know, spending money on holiday gifts and things like that. Again,
talk about problems with money and people not having enough. How many of these people on the call were at their local Best Buy to see the thousands and hundreds of thousands of dollars being spent on plasma TVs and other things? And then, you know, when someone walks in and says they can't afford whatever it is, you have a deaf ear. You know, you've got to look at those kind of things.
Yeah,
I couldn't even get into Best Buy. It took me an hour to get out of their parking lot the Christmas day. And then you're going to tell me that you can't afford $159 or $179 a month? You just spent $3,000.
And what you just said, what the realization has to be is perception of value.
Right, absolutely.
They perceive the plasma TV to be more valuable a month than what you do for the student.
It's cost versus value. And if you can make the value high enough that it's going to impact their life in something that they're going to be able to use every day. I mean, we've all gotten gifts that we can't really use. You get a pair of socks, on the other hand, that's going to be something you're going to be able to use more. So if I can take my money and transcend the self-defense aspect of it and make it something much more valuable, it's something they're going to be able to use every day, then there's not really a limit to what you can charge.
Out of schools, fixing, communicating of that perception to the parent is and retention results. Let's talk about that a little bit. So a lot of people think that November, December have to be very slow and down times of the year and things like that. I didn't see anything from December, but on November, I think you did something like 22 upgrades and 20 enrollments.
November for upgrades?
Okay.
Of course, people are thinking about holidays, so they're not looking to get involved in something like martial arts at the end of the year because they're thinking about Christmas and they're thinking about their family and they're traveling. However, we have a huge pull thing. So if I can get them to divert some of those holiday dollars and at the same time help them in their life to get them to maybe quit smoking or to, you know, to think about the value of that plasma TV versus the value of their child's education and the fact that their child is going to become a black belt through my program, they're going to evaluate that television and the martial arts a little bit differently. And so we've you know, gotten very good at working internal marketing during those 2 months versus the external marketing. Although we do.
So I mean, you know, for anybody that thinks that, you know, all the money moves out of the market and no one's thinking about upgrading, no one's thinking about martial arts at that time of the year. I mean, you do 30 upgrades in November, and you know, it has to do with how you position yourself during that time of year that makes the difference. And frankly, we do every year a promotion at one of the local shopping malls, like a little kiosk thing. And I mean, I think this year they did 72 certificates, something like that, for, you know, whatever, pick a number, $59, $89, $109, whatever it is. And of course, the leads at that time of the year when they come back from the first of the year are a little flakier than our traditional student enrollment. But 72 of them divided by a couple of schools. So people are looking to spend money at the time of the year. They're looking to get involved with gift cycle. Then there's a huge prospect pool out there for that, including what's in your school. So that's huge. That I think that'll be helpful for everybody. Good. Well, a couple last topics, and then I think our line will probably cut us off in a few. But you had just you were at the last black belt retreat in Breckenridge, or in a few of the other, you know, Maha Karate people and stuff like that. I think you've been there every year for the last 4 or 5 years. What's that experience like? Not necessarily, you know, the retreat itself, but why does a school owner that is going to do $500,000 this year in their school like that, what's that all about?
Oh, it's so many things. You know, number one is it's associating with people who are in the same mindset as you are. You know, some people, I know a lot of people in the martial arts industry, and very few of them actually get me, right? They don't understand making money and all these things. And if you associate with people that have a difference of opinion, and their difference of opinion to some people, they start becoming successful, and then Uncle Ned tells them about how they're, you know, doing a disservice, or they're, you know, just put something negative in there, and those guys, they kind of slip back into the mediocrity, and you know, I can't afford to do that. I'm never going to go back in that direction. I've as poor can be, and I don't ever want to go back to that place. And you know, now things are to the point where, as I mentioned earlier, I'm able to be much more charitable than I ever was before. I donate to charities. I sponsor the Special Olympics now, and give donations to the community just for gifts and hundreds of T-shirts to the community. We go in and do hundreds of hours of community service for the school system, and I'm able to provide careers to people that I would never have been able to do that for in the past. You know, I've got a full-time instructor now. He makes more in a month than I used to make in 6 months' time. And you know, where do those resources come from? You know, how can you provide those kind of things to the community and to people and change their lives like that if you don't have those resources to provide them?
Again, and I think there's two interesting quotes on that. Jim Rohn says that you'll become the sum, the average of the sum of the five people that you surround yourself with, that you spend the most time with. And Peter Drucker sort of says it a little bit more bluntly: you're the fifth, you know, and it just has to do with the way you think about things, and your reality will become the people that you choose to surround yourself with. And you don't choose your friends, but you do choose the environment that you put yourself in, where your friends will come from. And so you continue to go back out to Breckenridge to be surrounded by those type of people who are thinking that way and who want to be successful in there. But were there maybe one or two things that you thought were nuts and bolts that you went back and right away implemented in the school that you felt were pretty valuable?
Certainly some of the curriculum things, I'd always struggled with that, and I think that I've finally got that one nailed down, and just structuring your curriculum properly. It's like, you know, packaging a product properly. If you look at places or other products, you look at them just the way that they're packaging it. You know, for instance, like a box of cereal that's a generic brand that's got the white box, and you would find it at a low income grocery store. If that were on a high income grocery shelf right next to a Kellogg's box, huge difference. So if you package your programs properly and structure your curriculum properly, I think that can really help out in every other area. It gives you tremendous confidence in what you're doing and allows you to speak from a different place than you could before. I hashed it out with Master Oliver and a couple of guys there, and I think that was the biggest takeaway thing for me this time, which allowed me to come back and do those numbers that I did in November, December. I believe that was a direct correlation.
Sure, sure. And you know, again, you know, to kind of reiterate the very first point too, always at that type of an event where you're kind of inundated and you're kind of surrounding yourself by all these people, and you get a tailwind, you know, but hit the ground running when you get back, you know?
Yeah.
So that's exactly the type of environment that we're creating at those type of events, and we're going to translate that into the NAPMA events as well, these little regional seminars, of course, but especially the World Conference at the end of the year. So we're pretty excited about all that. Well, good. You know, I think, James, I think that's pretty comprehensive. I think that was pretty fantastic, to tell you the truth. Do you have maybe one or two of last, you know, get my thinking straight, you know, $120,000 or $200,000 pool, and I want to get where you are at, you know, $500,000 next year. You know, obviously, number one, I have to get my thinking straight. Number two, I have to get my pricing and my structures internal to the system in order, and I have to get my marketing hat on.
Well, start reading. I mean, leaders are readers. That's a fact. And if you start reading, that's how you can associate with some of these. You know, you may not be able to call Donald Trump up and personally spend an afternoon picking his brain, but you can read his books, which is the next best thing. You know, same thing with Anthony Robbins or Zig Ziglar, any of the people who are, you know, the what I would consider the ultra successful in life, and that's, they're willing to share those things. They've written books. Those are the biggest things. Master Oliver recommended the book to me, and I would recommend.
Yeah, we just did an interview with him a couple of weeks ago. Rob did, and it's going to be it's going to be NAPMACon. It's going to be NAPMA content in a couple of months.
Yeah, that's a mind-boggling book, and there, even though there's some things in there that are a little bit, you know, not usable in our environment, it gets your thinking, then the sky's the limit. And that's the kind of stuff that people need to be doing instead of just hanging out in their own four walls, in their own association and organization, training in martial arts and nothing more. You've got to get outside of the box a little bit. I mean, how many times have you heard that, think outside of the box? It applies, and the Mile High Karate organization has definitely got they are not only have their finger on the pulse, I believe that they are the pulse, even though I'm not directly a part of the organization. You know, I'm still tied in with Matt.
And you know, that's something wasn't really on my agenda for today, but that's something that you do have to be very careful what associations you choose. And that applies, of course, to martial arts associations. But what I mean of quasi-martial arts organizations out there, right, you've got the ATAs and the WTFs of the world who are martial arts-centric. And then you've got, all the way on the far other side of the spectrum, you've got the actual franchises. But all people who are going to help you get where you want to be, not necessarily that they have their agenda to get them where they want to be. So, for example, if I'm the Martial Arts Association, my focus is, if I'm the WTF or if I'm the ATA or if I'm the STF or WTT, whatever it is, which is fine.
Someone has entered the conference.
But if I'm organization number XYZ over here, and of course Mile High Karate would be one of those, but if I'm organization XYZ, my focus is creating successful schools with fantastic student outcomes. Then those are the guys I want to spend my time with. You know what I mean? Those are the people that I really want to surround myself with. Now, the people that want to perpetuate their art and glorify their grandmaster,
we
do that all. Help me get where I want to be.
We do that also. That's part of what we do as well, but that's not the only.
That's exactly right. That's exactly
seminars, and I talk very highly about them, and I'm perpetuating the art and all those things. But I've got another side to what I'm doing as well, and that's changing people's lives.
Yep, absolutely right. That's exactly right. Well, brilliant. Okay, James. So next year. There's no reason you can't do it next year. By the way, it can happen now. It doesn't have to happen 10 years from now. In fact, what we've seen at NAPMA, and you can take this one to the bank, unfortunately. Unless there is some sort of dramatic catalyst, the average martial arts school, within 16 months of it opening, will have found its plateau. So most martial arts schools, and let's say there's 20,000 plus or minus in the U.S., then I'm probably talking about roughly 15,000 of them, your opening date, your student count, gross revenue, retention models will pretty much be fixed from there on out. You may have incremental growth from year to year, you know, 2%, 3%, 5%, something like that. But mostly what we see from gym, unless someone does like what you said and they surround themselves by successful people and they decide to make a change in their business, then pretty much they'll plateau within 16 to 18 months. And it'll be that way pretty much forever. Like I said, 2 to 3% maybe growth per year, which is in commercial property cost increases and all sorts of other costs. So ultimately, unless you have some sort of a dramatic increase like that, mostly you're in business to break even. And we see that statistically across thousands of schools. And but if you're able to do what you've done and decide to make a change, decide to dramatically increase the business, decide to acquire the skill sets it takes to operate a very successful school, which most of the people on the call have done because they're either maximum impact members or higher, then they can have that explosive growth curve next one, and then figure out how to break through that plateau to the next one there. So bullet point list that you had for us was, number one, changing your thinking. Number two, becoming a marketer, understanding how to market your product better. Number three, getting your pricing in line. Not really change anything other than they generate more revenue. And then number three was continuing to surround yourself by people that can help you break through those obstacles. And then I forgot what number four was. Oh, number four was clearly and articulating training to the parents and the families on an ongoing basis. Does that sound pretty comprehensive, James?
Yeah, you missed the big one, though. Brass balls.
Oh, yeah. That was the implementation one. That was
brass
right.
Brass balls, and you've got to quit thinking and quit worrying about it. I don't want to fry my hamburgers. I want to broil them. Doesn't make me any less of a fast food restaurant than McDonald's, you know? It's just my way of doing it, and people sometimes will like my way of doing it. If they don't like my way, I just choose to do it this way. I don't think there's anything wrong with that, and I think that's where, you know, you've got to have the brass balls and just step out and do it your own way.
Yeah, and absolutely no reason in all that is on student quality.
No, in fact you won't sacrifice student quality. You will greatly enhance the quality of it because you're going to be much more focused on it. And if you're going to be charging more, you're going to be worried about the perception of the value at all times, whereas someone who may like it, you stay. If you don't, you go, whereas the other person who's more professional is going to be focused on making sure that the student is happy. And how can that not equate to a better quality program?
Yeah, absolutely. And your example of, you know, the broiled bird a little bit, only from a quality standpoint, think about, you know, Ruth's Chris versus the steakhouse down the street.
Yeah, versus Denny.
Both have good steak, right? But, you know, you've got the Ruth's Chris systems in place and the environment in place and, you know, all of those other things that make a really successful business. Rather than just for your time today, the line's going to... Thanks everybody for tuning in today. Take the bullet point list and go home and implement, you know, violently. Make sure, absolutely, I think if we take anything from the call, it's number one, you know, become a marketer and implement, and make sure that we're all...
Oh, there's one more thing I wanted to add.
Oh, please.
Make sure that whoever's in the call buys my book.
Oh, yeah. What's the book? Well, I didn't know anything about this. I wish I would have known about this. What's going on?
I've written a book. I've just finished a book, and it's my version of kind of this, and I've just put the finishing touches on it. And, you know, so if anybody on the call wants to get a copy of that, I'll do a special introductory rate before it goes nationwide or however I'm going to decide to distribute it out there.
Yeah, well, let's talk about that. Let's figure out some way to make it really attractive for them and make it work for everybody. But that's fantastic.
Yes.
Let's talk. Why don't you give me a call on my cell phone?
I will certainly do that.
All right, perfect. All right. Well, guys, thank you so much for tuning in. James, thank you so much for your time today. I really appreciate it. And I know that, that all of our participants on the call will get a lot out of it, and they'll be able to go back and implement. Thanks so much, guys. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.